Welcome to the Sean Chandler Podcast, a place to talk about movies way too much. As always, joining me is Griffin. Griffin, how you doing?
Howdy. I'm doing great on this Tuesday. Very overcast Tuesday, so very gloomy, but that's why I shut the blinds. I didn't want to look outside into the...
I thought you were in LA. I thought it was always sunny there.
Today it's... not actually right now it's the rainy season, so they say. Yes,
the rainy
January through February it occasionally rains and it's overcast, but it's a nice brisk 60 degrees, so I can't really complain about that.
Nice.
It's very nice.
So for me, I spent the weekend speaking at a retreat with 150 teenagers and being roughly abused by them. We played paint dodgeball. And the guy running the event grabbed a sponge full of paint and just smacked me on the side of my head. And then he's like, oh, by the way, it smacked me on the other side of my head. And then later he had the students compete to try and grab my shoes. So then they tackled me to the ground and ripped my shoes off. So my whole body hurts. I can't do that like I used to, just wrestle teenagers for a weekend and get no sleep. So that's what my weekend was like. And that leads us to this week's episode of the podcast, where we were trying to figure out what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
And we were looking at all like these small things, forgetting the obvious stuff, that some massive Star Wars stuff dropped. I was just so in preparation for this weekend mode, I forgot about it completely. But we have the leaks of what Trevorrow is going to do with his version of the movie, and it's totally different. It's not like tweaked. It's totally different. Yep. Me and you have pretty different takes on Rise of Skywalker, so there's a pretty nice little discussion we're going to have about all of that. But a couple things before we dive into this in this heavily Star Wars-focused episode of the podcast. I just wanted to talk about a couple things. First off, did you get a chance to see Bad Boys for Life?
No, I'm really kicking myself for that one because it was like all the signs were pointing to it not being good.
Of course, yeah.
And I had a screening and I had the choice to go to the screening or like do something else. And I was like, I'm going to sit back and just like edit a video or something. And so I missed the screening. Full disclosure, though, weirdly enough, I have not ever seen the original two Bad Boys, which was another reason why I didn't want to go into three because I hadn't seen those movies.
Yeah.
So I was like, well, is it going to work for me if I haven't seen those two films? So I just ended up skipping it, and apparently it's like the best January release of all time or something like that. Like it's supposed to be so good.
And it falls very much into this category. I call them fast food movies or Taco Bell movies.
Yeah.
But it just does it so well. It just knows how to entertain its target audience. And when I first watched it, I wasn't sure, like, am I just the target audience? And so I really dug this. Like, I'm not quite sure. Like, am I reading this wrong? And then everyone, I got on Twitter and all these people that I was assuming would hate this type of movie were like, I actually had a lot of fun with it, and a lot of people are saying, and I would say this too, it's the best of the franchise, which who would have guessed? I mean, 17 years later, these guys are in their 50s. It was in development hell for 10 years. It's a January release. Every single sign was that this movie was not going to be good.
Yeah.
And it is. It just is. So how about Doolittle? You see Doolittle?
Sadly, I did not.
You missed all the classics.
I purposefully avoided that. There was no way I was going to. I didn't even get a screening for it. And I was just like, I'm not going to waste money on that trash. Especially after you and I had our conversation about it last time. I was like, it's just not. I'm not going to go see that. But just quickly going back to the Bad Boys thing, I just think it's really funny what happens when you remove Michael Bay from these big franchises he's established. Like, we saw it happen with Transformers. They removed him and we get Bumblebee.
Right.
Arguably the best out of the entire series.
Mm-hmm.
You remove him from Bad Boys and you get arguably the best out of the entire series. So it's just, it's really funny, and I'm sure a lot of people will give Michael Bay crap for that, but I think we can't shortchange him. Like, there is a reason people like the first two Bad Boys, mm-hmm. and it's because Michael Bay, Will Smith, and Martin Lawrence. So it's like,
right.
It might be the best, but you can't, you know, Michael Bay deserves credit, you know.
And this movie works because it builds off those two. That, like, his two established kind of like a certain bravado, a rapport, certain sense of humor. And then you bring in some other directors that aren't quite as flashy with the action, though it's still really good with fun with the action. Yeah. But it, you know, it's a little bit more focused on the characters and their arcs. And so then there's more emotion to it inside the melodrama. And you're like, wow, that, who knew a Bad Boys movie could be like this? I mean,
once again,
it's not high art, but it is in that just like fun. If you're in the mood for an action movie that's going to have cool stuff, funny jokes, lead characters you like, and a villain that's kind of compelling with the way that it all plays out and actually given some character development consequences.
Yeah.
It works. So that's pretty cool. All right,
just to kind of cap that off, I think the other interesting thing about Bad Boys and the third Bad Boys in general is that, you know, and I think it's a reason, I was actually talking to my girlfriend about this. One of the reasons why I think Will Smith has struggled so much in his later years or as of late has been because first of all, the projects he's picking, but he's still trying to be that 20-year-old action star. And not having seen this Bad Boys, but just based off of everything I've heard, I feel like this is the first time he's actually went with the fact that he is a 50-year-old guy and can, like, you know, he has new challenges that he can face as an actor and kind of incorporate those into the characters. So, like, I really like that they went that route.
And even kind of what you said there, the movie, everyone around him is basically telling his character that.
Yeah.
His character is like, dude, you're not the guy you were before. You can't keep doing what you've been doing.
Yeah.
And like, they poke fun at some of the stuff he's doing to try and stay and look young. And there's all this stuff. And everyone, the plot of it is, you can't be who you were 25 years ago. It was like, that's just like such a smart way to do this sort of thing. While not, it's not like that's mind blowing. It's just acknowledge your age. And it's real easy to do with Lawrence's character because, you know, he's a family man. And so his kids are grown up. So it's pretty obvious. And so then you poke fun at kind of that Will Smith, like, hey, I'm still cool. I'm still 25. Nah, maybe not, so much. All right, we had one news story I wanted to talk about before we go into all Star Wars mode. National Treasure 3 looks like it's happening. And like on this one day, they announced this same screenwriter that worked on Bad Boys for Life is doing Bad Boys 4, which you get to the end of this movie and you want that. Like, I didn't really want Bad Boys 3. And by the end of the movie, I was like, I hope we get a 4. And then 2 days later, they're like, it's coming. So I was very happy about that. And they announce from the same screenwriter, National Treasure 3 is finally coming. You're generationally for that National Treasure, we're like probably at a very interesting age to have different perspectives on those movies.
Right.
For me, I've thought that both of those are just really great family adventures.
100%.
Like, they're dumb as can be, but they work for exactly what they are. Very watchable.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, like, it's, you know, in the 90s, we had the Mummy movies, and then a little bit after them, we had the National Treasure movies, and it's like they kind of filled the void of Indiana Jones, per se. I mean, it's like, you can't even compare it to Indiana Jones. Indiana Jones is, like, top tier. Like,
right,
they are, but it is bringing back the adventure film, which I am so desperate for more adventure movies because we get them enough. I was like,
totally agree.
It was like happy seeing like that new Tomb Raider movie. I was like, okay, it's like, it's not a great film, but I just enjoy the getting an adventure. And then like,
well, even why the Jumanji movies. Why was that first one so refreshing? Because it's just an adventure movie with a great set of characters.
Completely. And then the, oh God, what was the other one that happened? There was, and then, you know, you have so much trying to, you know, God knows what with Uncharted. And I'm just like, it's basically there on a silver platter for you to just like take reins. But anyways, that's going off on a tangent, but yes, National Geographic, National Treasure 3. I'm very excited for it. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm curious as to if it's just going to be a Disney Plus sort of movie that they put on there, or if they're going to actually like do a theatrical release. Because it is weird that they're doing it this far removed from the second one. I mean, no one was really clamoring for National Treasure 3, but like,
I think that they're like, it's one of those franchises is kind of like, kind of a little bit embarrassing to like really enjoy it, but you know, everyone you talk to is like, oh, they're just a lot of fun, and they were both profitable. And so it's one of those ones that, and they set up the idea of a third film in the second one.
Right.
And so the fact that it took so long is just kind of, it's weird because, like, why didn't you do it 5 years later? As soon as, like, whatever went down with Nicolas Cage's financials, and then suddenly he showed up, started showing up at 10 movies per year.
Yeah.
Why couldn't he just go to Disney and be like, hey guys, the last one made $800 million. The one before that made $800 million. I'll do it. Like,
yeah.
Well, I don't get it.
Right. Well, I completely agree with you there, especially with his financial decision. But I wonder if this means that John Turteltaub is not coming back, because he did the first two. I believe he did the first two. He did the first two,
and then they did Sorcerer's Apprentice.
Yeah.
So it's Nicolas Cage, and so they even did something together afterwards. So they seem to still like have their groove, and maybe it's because that one failed. Disney got mad at them or something like that. I don't know.
That would have been my guess, because that one was such a massive flop, which, I mean, I don't blame Nicolas Cage for that at all, because I think he was actually the one good part about that movie. But I wonder if that means
and
that
all
John
the shoe tying jokes or whatever the shoe jokes.
Yeah, these
very odd jokes they kept repeating. Yeah. Like, where are we going with these shoe jokes?
It's bizarre. But yeah, I wonder if that means that John Turteltaub is not going to come back, which I would totally be okay with. And in fact, I'd like to get someone newer there to kind of like shake up the genre a little bit, you know, or not genre, but the franchise a little bit. It could be fun.
Right. And, you know, the inherent nature of these movies, if they did this movie 10 years ago, I'd want Turteltaub back. Let's keep the whole team together. Enough times passed, though, that, you know, cultural expectations, all sorts of stuff has kind of shifted to where you probably want to put a little bit something interesting in there. And
what
his last thing was with the Meg, and it just kind of, he's just kind of a journeyman, no specific style to him, director. And he's done a bunch of things. I mean, While You're Sleeping, one of the great rom-coms of all time. I just praise the National Treasure movies. Nothing against him, but if you're going to bring it back, maybe let's tie this back to our Bad Boy story. Maybe bring in some other people that can put some life into it. But, you know, Nicolas Cage, he never really phones it in. It might not be good. It might probably be bonkers, but you're going to get something interesting from him. So I'm all on board on another National Treasure.
Yeah,
I hope it gets a theatrical release. I'm always rooting for people to get that revival. And or unless they're going to be like, we want to go all in, and we're going to do $100 million National Treasure for Disney Plus because we want people to sign up so bad and have good content. And we realized, hey, Home Alone's not remake. That's kind of not a good project. So let's do National Treasure 3 with Nicolas Cage returning. So
I you know who would be interesting to see get in the director's chair? And while I want to see this guy do something completely different, like R-rated horror stuff, like I've always thought like Gore Verbinski is the logical choice for like those kind of movies, just given his work on the Pirates films, like The Lone Ranger and stuff like that. Like he's very much the Disney live action adventure kind of guy because of the Pirates movies. So like I always forget that he did not do the National Treasure film. So maybe getting someone like him in there who he is very much that go-to guy for that kind of subgenre within Disney could be cool, but I'd to be honest, I'd probably rather see him do like an R-rated horror movie again. But who knows? Who would be your pick though if you had to choose someone to you know direct over Turteltaub?
The only name that's coming to mind is the Jumanji guy, just because we mentioned it. And as soon as I said that, I was like, I mean, that's like that's the guy that right now has got the groove for these adventure films. And I mean, that's an ensemble film, but so are the National Treasure films. I mean, you've got, of course, Nicolas Cage in the lead, but it's all about that team of people that he's there with. And so then that's the one that's coming to mind, having not thought through other people. And I'm fine if Turteltaub comes back too. But, you know, there's probably some value in spicing things up. All right, from there, let's move on to our big subject of the day. And we're going to spend a lot of time on this. So we're going to kind of build up to our thoughts on the leaks about Duel of the Fates. If you don't know what this is, originally, the director of Jurassic World, Colin Trevorrow, was going to do Episode 9. He was on it for years. And then suddenly he was out. JJ was back in. And we didn't know too much about what his plans were. And then last week, his script dropped, leaked on the internet. Totally different. I mean, totally different script, only small, like, little hints of very vague similarities. Otherwise, I mean, they just went, like, page one, all plot points out, boom, new script inside of this. So let's build up to that.
Yeah.
Let's go back in the to Jurassic World. Jurassic World makes roughly $10 bazillion, and he's hired to do Star Wars. What was kind of your feelings on that at the time?
Honestly, so weirdly, and I don't necessarily feel the same way anymore, but when the first time I saw Jurassic World, I was like, that really did an excellent job of capturing the Spielbergian magic that, like, has been missing from a lot of since, like, Super 8. And while it's not exact, I thought, like, Trevorrow did a really good job bringing back the Jurassic, like, Park franchise. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot of silly stuff in there. It's very much like a B movie, but...
Right.
I mean, nothing's ever going to be what the original Jurassic Park was. Even Spielberg couldn't even do that with his sequel, The Lost World.
I like Jurassic World more than Lost World by a good bit. I'm way more likely to rewatch Jurassic World than Lost World.
Yeah.
It's that Taco Bell movie to me, too. It's like Chris Pratt on a motorcycle with velociraptors. That's pretty dumb. That's a stupid scene. He's a train of velociraptors, but it's awesome. And then, of course, you know, the final showdown, it's like, all right, we got the T-Rex from the original verse, like a Frankenstein dinosaur with and velociraptors. I mean, sold.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stupid as can be, I'm sold.
Just you mentioned that, it is so dumb. But you know what?
And then the rich billionaire guy that's so cocky, he's like, I can fly a helicopter, and flies up, shoot a machine gun, and it crashes. Like, and it pauses to do, like, dramatic moments. I've got this, or whatever the line was.
Yeah, it was like stupid it was as can be. Stupid. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, for sure. Like, it kind of did, like, the Force Awakens thing, where it's, like, the thing we had seen before. But, like, I thought it kind of was an interesting concept, where it's, like, bringing this amusement, but basically what Jurassic would have been,
happened.
So what happens now when we have to deal with the repercussions? So it's, like, there's interesting stuff in there, but, like, there's really dumb characters and dumb stuff that happens. So, yeah, I liked that movie, and I was very much okay with the prospect of him doing episode 9, because I thought he had, like, especially when you have two films of build up before, he's basically just given this story and has to wrap it up, you know? And this is before we knew all the ridiculous story issues that they would have had. So I thought, okay, he's maybe not my first choice, but, like, I think episode 9 is in capable hands, you know?
Yeah. I was kind of nervous because my enjoyment of Jurassic World is so distinct to things that you could only do with Jurassic Park, that franchise.
Sure. Yeah.
And so then I was like, there's a lot of dumb, and I don't want Star Wars to get that dumb. So, like, I was pretty nervous because of those ingredients. I didn't hate the idea. I even thought back, even what they did with the original trilogy, which one's the most simplistic and just kind of bombastic in the spectacle? Return of the Jedi. And so you bring in a guy that just did this bombastic, it does the spectacle, it does the stupid, so, like, the stuff that's just fun to watch. Okay.
Yeah.
I can dig that. I am a little bit nervous. That was kind of my take on it. Then we jump forward a couple of years. Was that Book of Henry comes out?
Yeah.
Was that?
Yeah, the
Book of Henry. I never saw it. And everything I heard was like, holy cow, this guy's about to get fired from Star Wars.
I saw the Book of Henry, and I think it was very kind of that movie. But, you know, here's the thing when it comes to the Book of Henry. Is it a good movie? Absolutely not. Is it the abysmal trash that, like, every single person I talk to makes it out to be? I really don't think. I think, you know, credit where credit's due. Trevorrow takes some big swings. He tries to do a lot of interesting things, tackle grief in a different sort of way. It's just none of those, like, they're just they are horrible misses, and so you get something that's like, if you haven't seen Book of Henry, it's basically this woman's dead son telling her to kill this guy who was like treated his friend bad. It's just, it's so unbelievable. Like, you can't even see your disbelief because of how grounded the film really was. And you know, every filmmaker kind of has that sort of thing. I didn't think that like that movie would, you know, cause such an uproar or lead him to be fired. I thought, okay, you know, it was a big miss, but I kind of appreciated the ambition there. So, and I think if anything, that's the takeaway, is the guy is willing to think outside the box in order to tell an interesting story. Whether it works, you know, remains to be seen. And so I'm like, okay, under the guidance of Lucasfilm, maybe he'll still be fine. So I don't know. It was weird.
Well, of course, we're looking back in the year 2020, and it seems like one of the big differences between MCU and Lucasfilm is MCU has very clear guidance.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like there's that guidance at Lucasfilm. Anyway, right. He's kicked out, finds out J.J. Abrams is coming back. My initial thoughts when I heard that was like, okay, J.J. is not known for landing the ship. But in this context, I think he probably can. In this context, I'm not nervous that he was brought back. Like, I'd had thoughts of like, what if you get Jon Favreau? I mean, he was doing Lion King, so I didn't think it would happen. But it was all kind of like, at that point in time, with the time constraints they have, you don't want to get outside the box pick guy to try and land the ship with not a lot of lead up. So JJ seems like the obvious one. He's been in the conversation the whole time. He knows what's going on. So I was pretty cool with it. Your thoughts on when they first brought JJ back?
Yeah, I mean, I was really excited, mainly because I didn't like The Last Jedi, and I was really excited because
Last Jedi really either.
Right, yeah. So it's like, I was hopeful of the prospect that JJ gets to make his own Star Wars movie that's like, it doesn't have to be like a retelling of A New Hope or like kind of like along the same story beats of that. He can just do whatever he wants. He's given a free, you know, creative reign, and we'll get something really interesting. And I have always defended him on his endings, because I've always felt that I always go back to MI3, his feature film debut, and I say, if the franchise had ended there, I think that's an excellent send-off for Ethan Hunt and the character and everything. Like, everything just felt wholesome and complete. Now, obviously, like, you can continue it on, but, you know, I thought it was good. And I actually didn't hate Star Trek Into Darkness either. So I don't know. I was very excited for it. So, but, you know, yeah, you did have those time constraints in there, but I thought, you know, he's such an efficient filmmaker, this wasn't going to be an issue.
Right. And coming from television as well, I mean, you have to be able to get that story together quickly and make it happen. And then, of course, that does lead us to The Rise of Skywalker. We have not totally different takes. I think our landing point of enjoyment is very different. We have some similarities and overlap in our feeling of like, ooh, there's a lot of problems with what they put together here. For me, I didn't necessarily hate the plot directions that they took things, but it felt to me that they had two movies and they needed way more time to cook everything. And so instead of doing this as two movies, it's just like, Palpatine's back, he's got a podcast, we got to stop him. And I mean, it's just everything is kind of like that. Lando comes, he's going to save the day, and he's going to go get the whole galaxy. We're not going to show you that, we're not going to build up to that. He just shows up, like, everything is just over, like, cooked so quickly. And it just, everything has to play out exactly the way it does, happens so fast. And so, did I have fun being in the world of Star Wars? Sure. Did I hate the reveals and the things that they did? I can't say that I didn't hate the, and if you haven't seen the movie,
I mean, massive
leave
spoilers.
Right now. This is spoilers. Yeah. We're about to totally dive into it, but she's a Palpatine. I didn't hate that. Bringing back Palpatine, I didn't hate that. Did they earn it in this movie? Did they build to it? I don't think they did. And I think they needed a lot more time to establish those things so that a bunch of people didn't just feel like you just threw them in there to like, because you felt like you had to. You just had, you couldn't trust that you could do. And I think if they'd done two movies, I think they could have built towards it, but they didn't. And so then you get a movie that you have your take. What's your take?
I think it's the worst Star Wars movie ever made. So there's that. I really do. It's like the one movie I can, like, I can even go back and rewatch The Last Jedi just for, like, you know, an Elseworld Star Wars experience, because I think you take that film out of the canon or whatever, and it's like, oh, it's a really well-directed and written movie, and it looks gorgeous. So, like, there's that. I don't know. I mean, maybe the only other one that I can't see myself ever rewatching is Solo. But like this movie just makes me mad when watching it, because it's baffling how like Disney allowed this thing to be put out. Like, the script is a mess. It's all over the place. There are plot conveniences and it's a story that's focused more with like literally explaining plot beat for plot beat than it is like developing its characters. So like all of the characters feel like they don't grow as people, where I feel like this is the third film. We need to conclude their arc and make them feel like they went on a journey. And I didn't think that like any of the characters got that. Like, they told you it. They made plot points to make it seem like they went on journeys, but like, I never felt it. I never believed it. And then some of the creative decisions I just could not get on board with. I agree. I think the movie just like, it starts at like 11 and it just jumps all over the place. And like, I was like, okay, this is cool. I like the fast-paced nature, the brisk pace, but it's just, it's so choppy. We're hopping from planet to planet and like, nothing seems to be like cohesive. Like, there's these weird Leia scenes thrown in there that just don't work because Carrie Fisher is sadly dead, and you can't, it felt like they were acting against a green screen and then they just plopped this, you know, non-playable character, for all you video game fans out there, they plopped that person in there and then just, she had canned responses. Like, it just, and it pains me to say that because like, it's Carrie Fisher and I'm just happy to see her back, but they put it in a way that actually worked, so they shouldn't have done it at all. And it's just, it felt like it was so concerned with nostalgia and getting rid of like everything Rian Johnson did, like whether you liked it or not, like it felt so concerned with just dismissing that movie that it couldn't be a movie itself. Like, Palpatine coming back actually made no sense. They went over it in opening crawl. They're like, oh, he sent out a broadcast, and then apparently the resistance didn't hear that broadcast, and then Poe himself is just like, well, Palpatine's back, and I'm like, what are we doing here, guys?
That's sort of like, from my perspective, Palpatine is the guy that originated essentially this whole arc of all these movies, with his scheming in the background that led to this whole journey. He's the main bad guy in the originals, or in the original ones, of course, in the prequels. So the idea that he's still behind there, it makes sense to me. He's also a guy that was obsessed with cheating death. That's right. Built into it. He's a guy that was all responsible for all this cloning technology. And we're in a universe where force ghosts show up all the time and dead people show up glowing, talking to people. So they have all the ingredients there to have a nice reason why Palpatine is back, how he ties into all of this. But they literally pass it off with one line of dialogue. You know, Charlie from Lost shows up and he goes, dark science, cloning technology, the Force. Like, he just says like, it's one line of dialogue. It's like, okay, like you put it in there, but you could have earned it though if you just, you'd slow cooked it. If you hadn't been like, it's a trilogy, it's got to be one movie. Like, if you, whatever went on behind the scenes, because Terrio said, oh yeah, we debated doing his two movies. Like, well, I think anyone with common sense could figure that out.
Yeah, well, going back to the Palpatine thing, like, you're right. They could have found a way for him to be in there. I mean, in fact, all of the answers were in Colin Trevorrow's script. He didn't fit they need to be there. So they just took the lazy, cheapest route because they were under a time crunch and they didn't care. They're like, oh, people like Palpatine, he can be back. But like, I never got the feeling, like, they'll tell you, oh, he was supposed to be there from the get-go. No, he wasn't. Like, you can't just tell me that he was, like, had they planted seeds in The Force Awakens that maybe Palpatine was around, right, I'd buy it. But there's, like, nothing to make me believe that Palpatine was the guy pulling the strings. I mean, it just felt, I mean, a lot of this movie feels lazy, but that especially just felt really lazy.
So I just desperately want to hear the behind the, like, what was actually happening in these meetings with Kathleen Kennedy, JJ? What were they thinking back in 2013, 2014, 2015? And when did, like, it, like, all this stuff start happening? Because, you know, you can look at the evidence of the original trilogy, and George was kind of making it up as he goes along. He had ideas in his head, and then he went, oh, yeah, they're brother and sister. Let's throw. And he had these last minute additions that he made. But this isn't one guy in a solid, singular vision for it, passing that along to screenwriters and directors to make it happen. It just feels like directing by committee and directing by studio notes and by reading reviews and the comment section and Twitter and Reddit and reacting a little bit too much to the point that it's like, all right, now in this very short time constraint, we have to do this. We have to get it done. And then they microwaved it instead of slow cooking it. And so it's a frustrating movie. That leads us to leaks. Or did you have one final thought?
I do have one final thought. And I'll get to that when we start talking about the leaks too. But like, I think a lot of people are going to be quick to blame Kathleen Kennedy and a lot of this stuff. I've kind of come around on Kathleen Kennedy. I think she made some questionable decisions. Or like, you know, tenure at Lucasfilm. But, I mean, she went to bat for Rian Johnson. And she was willing to take risks and do something different. And it felt like Bob Iger was the guy who actually stepped in and was like, no, we're not doing this. Because it's like, people are complaining. But they were just like reading the internet. And so, I've kind of come around on the idea that they didn't necessarily need a fully flesh out roadmap. I think had, you know, as we'll see with the Trevorrow script, had you just let that filmmaker take what Johnson had and finish the story in the way that he saw fit, if you let three filmmakers like kind of like passing the torch and telling the story, I think you have a better chance of sticking the landing as opposed to when like a studio head or like the president of Disney comes in and is like, well, no, I don't like that. Like, we can't do that because it's not nostalgia. I feel like there, as we'll see with the Trevorrow script, which maybe we should just get to, like, I feel like it could have worked had they used his script or his story or anything, you know?
Yeah, it's so tough to know.
Yeah,
I think you retweeted someone back right after Rise of Skywalker came out, like, this is the weirdest trilogy that's come out in the longest time, because it feels like every single movie actively dislikes the previous movie.
Yes.
And because, I mean, it felt like Rian Johnson, like, Snoke, he's nobody. And, oh, that kind of mystery about Rey's parents, that goes nowhere. And then you get to Rise of Skywalker and it's like, just kidding, they're really important. She's not just like a big deal, she's a really big deal. Yeah. It's like, okay, what are you guys doing? So, like I said, for me, I just, going to the world of Star Wars, I can enjoy the J.J. Abrams roller coaster ride, but at the same time be like, this is Star Wars. It's supposed to be a lot better than this. It's not supposed to be a TV dinner. It's supposed to be fine dining, and that is not what this is. And even some of the criticisms of, you know, the Disney Star Wars in general is that George Lucas always seemed to have ideas that he was tackling for all the many faults of the prequels. There's a lot of ambition inside of there. And then especially with the two JJ films, they're just designed to be roller coaster rides. There's no real ambition inside of it, which is disappointing. And it leads us to what we know of Mr. Trevorrow's script. So I'll just kind of give the real quick bullet points of some of the big differences. It starts off with Finn, Rose, BB-8 on a mission to steal a Star Destroyer and get a bunch of equipment inside of it. And like at some point in time, Finn shoots a stormtrooper and he's like sees the guy and he goes, oh crap, I knew this guy. And kind of going back to that arc that he had in The Force Awakens and building upon that, eventually they're captured, put in a POW camp, and then this leads to kind of an escape. And a group of stormtroopers are like him that also are like, hey, we don't like to kill people. We were kidnapped. Not cool. And that leads to him, Finn, becoming kind of the leader of this group of stormtroopers. And eventually, I guess the final ground battle is going to be on Coruscant, which immediately I was like, yeah, why didn't we go back there? Like, I want to see what that place looks like. That's a nice, yeah. Those bookends that make sense. Like to like why one of the reasons I was okay with Palpatine, because there's a bookend there. And but this is also a bookend of like these places that seem important inside of this universe and where it started. Let's see it at the end as well. So we have a big ground battle there inside of it. And then on our, was there, did I miss any important details there? Rose was apparently a big part of the script.
Yeah, I mean, it was continuing Finn and Rose's arc. And I kind of like the fact that it was like them going undercover behind enemy lines to like to start up communications. Because basically what had happened, so at the end of The Last Jedi, they sent out communications and their call wasn't answered. And that's because the First Order had cut off all their communications to suppress them. And so now they had to go out to reactivate communications and get help. Otherwise, you know, so it like them going on this like undercover, this covert mission sounds really exciting. It's pressing. And, you know, with Finn having to go and have his arc that he had set up in The Force Awakens, like fully realized, like, it's baffling to me. But yeah, no, I think I think you're on the right track for right now. Yeah.
And that's one of those plot points that was kind of like, they give like a taste of it in Rise of Skywalker. If he meets some other people like him, but it doesn't really go anywhere. It's not developing that. Instead, they're like, let's do a little taste of that, little taste of he's force sensitive.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, and so it's, you get something with him, whereas here it's like, let's give him this big like role inside of this that's important and builds off of what was there before, you know, completing a story.
Right.
Other one being that some people make it a big deal of like Rose was very prominent inside of this one as opposed to a minute, 19 seconds or whatever of screen time that she got in Rise of Skywalker.
Right.
There's a lot of different perspectives on her kind of getting sidelined. It's tough for me to get too worked up about it because I just don't think that they made a character that won a lot of people over. And I think that's the problem of like, what do you do when you have a character that doesn't seem to work? Jar Jar didn't seem to work. They sidelined him for the next two movies. And so I can't be like, oh man. Though you have a lot of people on the internet like, this is like, you allowed the trolls on the internet to win. Like, it's not just the trolls, though. There's a lot of people that would never, like, don't in any way endorse the hate, the bullying. We fully would say that was awful. The character, though, just not very interesting and part of a subplot that I don't think worked really at all. So,
true.
I didn't mind that she was sidelined. Had she been written better, had she had a better storyline, maybe it could have been the way to win a bunch of us over, like myself.
Right, and from what the show, I think it shows that they improved the character. They wrote her really well, and they made her integral to Finn's arc and whatnot. And which I'm okay with seeing that. Like, I think sometimes it's a little hyperbole the way people like bash Rose in The Last Jedi. Like, I'm not the biggest fan of her character, but she's not like offensively bad. It's not like a Jar Jar level character there. She makes one decision that I didn't like and that kind of irritated me, but like there's no reason why she can't be prominent in the follow-up, especially because of like how important she is to Finn and what's going on with him. And so like it seems to me that they made the right call in this script to, you know, take the hand that they were dealt from Rian Johnson and write her in a way that made her a better character. So,
yeah, I guess it's just my overall thought that always makes it tricky when looking at conceptually what would have happened. If you probably sat down, if we, let's say they made this one and it turned out not very good. It wasn't executed very well. Then we'd be looking at, and then JJ had this idea and it was like, this ties back to this. And this is how, and it, I think there's always a little bit, it's easier to kind of, without seeing how it's executed, we can imagine the perfect version of it.
Yeah,
whereas we saw a not great version of whatever. And it's not like, I'm sure JJ's like, yeah, man, we did the best we could. And you get that in Chris Terrio's comments that he's been putting out there. Of like, he's trying to like make it clear, like, we tried to do something. Like, seems like there's a bit of them trying to play cover up for themselves.
Yeah.
Because they can look at it and go, like, this isn't the one isn't exactly what we wanted it to be. So I think there's always that side whenever I have this, would it be better or not? There's a lot of things here, like this whole plot line about Finn. Absolutely, I think we should have gotten this.
Oh,
I mean, I think this is one that's like easy for me to say. In general, would I wanted this to happen? Yes. And all the stuff that I said about Rose, I didn't mind that she wasn't used prominently in Rise of Skywalker, but I also wouldn't mind if she had been either, if she was written
right.
That's the key thing of like, don't have her in the middle of a final battle crash into a guy. That's not a good idea. That's a very strange thing to add into a script. And don't have her go to a casino to free animals. That's kind of a weird thing to put randomly in the middle of your movie. And you associate her with a bunch of stuff that makes people go, what is this doing in a Star Wars movie? Anyway, so both agree, would have loved to see them do this with Finn. Like a really cool thing to add in there that we haven't seen before. And then on the Kylo Ren and Rey storylines, you have Kylo is on this mission for a holocron to find like a Sith Lord. I didn't fully grasp exactly where all of that was going. How did that play? Did you understand the plot point a little bit better?
What, like in Trevorrow's script or in
Trevorrow's script.
Another one where
there's a little bit of overlap on both of them and what they're trying to do.
Yeah, I think so. We got a little bit of it in The Rise of Skywalker, not nearly enough in my opinion. But I mean, yeah, basically he's like Kylo's out there searching for like, you know, ultimate power or whatever, and he's looking for the Sith holocron because he's basically trying to just like doubling down on Kylo the villain, which is really what they should have done in the first place. Because why would you not make him the villain of the entire series? He's been your primary antagonist the whole time. So anyways, he's like, he's going out there. And I think there was like something where like he comes into contact with, this like entity. I don't remember. Cause
there's
some like
weird stuff. Like he faces Darth Vader and it's kind of one of those kind of dream kind of real things that happen. Actually like this scene right here.
That scene right there.
Where Luke cuts off Darth Vader's head and then he realizes it's him all along.
Yeah. Like there's like some stuff in there and I just really liked the mission that they had Kylo going on because it felt like they were like digging deep into Star Wars mythology and lore, and it felt like it was kind of like tying back to the prequels more and tying back to the original trilogy in like ways that felt natural but not like nostalgia porn or whatever. So like I really liked that, and I don't know if it's in this or because there was also another draft of script that Trevorrow after this one that was kind of like a blending of this and the stuff in Rise of Skywalker where like he was the one who killed Rey's parents. Which I absolutely love because it's like not only can we still her being her own person, which I was kind of okay with that. Her parents don't need to be anyone of lineage. It makes Kylo even more of like a sinister person. Like it just completely it bolsters both characters in a really does things to their arcs that are interesting. You know, so like does she have to come? Stuff about like Rey being a Jedi, about her having to make some, you know, some morally questionable like decisions and showing that you don't have to be purely good or purely evil. You know, we are people, we can have like emotions, you know. So there was just there was a lot of interesting stuff in there with them.
And then force ghosts show up to try and convert Kylo back to Ben. But then he's been extinguished, so he turns out to just be Mr. Bad Guy inside of it. And then in the very end, after all's defeated, to kind of tie things back once again, Rose and Finn take a bunch of Broom Kids, including Broom Kid from Last Jedi, to Rey on a distant planet to have them train the next generation of Jedi. I think for me, what some of it makes it tricky is whether you give the easy answer that it's like, yeah, she is somebody important, and we got redemption inside of it, which is very Star Wars-y type stuff to do, redemption, and everybody's related to somebody. I think it feels a little bit like we're just doing what we did before. And if you don't do that, it feels like it lacks a little bit of that, the twists, the turns, the punches, the reveals that you want in a Star Wars movie. And so it's like, I look at the two options on the table and I go, okay, this one feels kind of convenient and didn't feel set up. And this one feels like you just played it out, but I kind of would have liked to have something in there with some of it to Kylo Ren is bad and it just keeps going without like a turn arc inside of it. Or Rey, she's a nobody. She really is a nobody. It's just kind of straight line. And so I don't know what the right answer is. And I think so much of it just goes back to that. I just wish that they'd had a more cohesive idea where they wanted to take things. And that goes to JJ not just setting up mystery boxes left and right in The Force Awakens, and Rian Johnson, don't just subvert everybody's expectations and let's try and have something that's going somewhere. I don't think they did that. And so I look at this one and I go, there's a bunch of stuff in here that I think is like really good, really interesting. And then there's a side to it where I go, I can see where it feels like it doesn't have as much of that oomph, though, at the same time.
Really? Oh, the Trevorrow script? Really?
Because I just don't feel like it doesn't have the, you know, I mean, you think Empire, Return of the Jedi, there's these big moments inside of it of like, if you're saying that Anakin is this fallen hero and then he sacrifices himself and then we replace that with Kylo's evil and he stays that way. And it's just keeps going. And that's not necessarily always a bad thing, but what is the interesting thing? If like your interesting thing is everything just keeps going down this path, I kind of go, okay, I kind of get that, but I'd have to see how that plays out to like have big emotion inside of it.
Yeah. I think for me, and I kind of get what you're saying, but like for me, this feels like it like far more grander and epic and fulfilling and climactic than anything we got in The Rise of Skywalker. This feels like there's a whole battle in the streets of Coruscant. There's like an aerial battle.
That's excellent. That's what I wanted. That makes sense. Totally on board with that.
Yeah, like this. I mean, I know we say this every time. There's like a trilogy, and the third act feels epic. But this does feel like a Return of the King kind of like just climax, and I like that. And I feel we were kind of gypped of that in the Rise of Skywalker. Nothing.
Yeah,
really
but
felt
there was. But that whole gigantic fleet, it was so big. It was the largest fleet I've ever seen.
And I felt...
Did you see just how much lightning shot out of his hands? It was so epic lightning from his fingers.
And you know what? I felt nothing. So, I do kind of like about Kylo ultimately being good or being bad or going down the path of evil is... Because in life, there are people who are conflicted, who have good and darkness inside of them. And in Star Wars, we always see that person turn to the light side. What if they just weren't capable of it and they just were inherently evil? I think that's what makes his arc really interesting is because... As much as we want to believe that we can bring him back and that he is a good person, he ultimately isn't. And I think the stuff in there with Rey about her having to make some tough moral choices is more interesting than her just having to overcome the fact that she's a Palpatine. Like, what Terrio and JJ did was just so on the nose, and like, you're more than your family name, and it's like stuff that we've seen in Star Wars throughout the years. This, to me, Trevorrow's script feels like Star Wars, but feels like it's doing something vastly different too. So like it also, I think, probably would have given this sequel trilogy more of an identity. Because the sequel trilogy, to me, has no identity, so...
Right. Yeah, that's... I think it's that... if I read it, maybe I'd see the buildup of all the pieces coming together with his to kind of feel like... I can know what I would feel watching Finn riding his space horse down the streets of Coruscant, shooting lasers, dual-wielding blasters, taking out evil guys. I feel when I see that, and it's like, yeah, like, this is Star Wars, and we're back to where we came from, and gotcha. I just don't know, like, what they would have to do to build Kylo to make me feel something of like, okay, he's just evil. When you have a franchise that's so much about kind of the ups and downs and like, what's that final note that we're ending on? And the whole idea is that the Skywalker line is closed out. And I don't know. I just can't get there just yet. Like I said, if I read it, maybe if I read a few more articles, I'd find that thing through line. And some of it's probably, I tend to be more inclined towards like, okay, yeah, just give me the happy ending. Like, I'm not going to complain as much if you get, like, I show up for Star Wars movies for certain beats. And, you know, part of what made me frustrated with Last Jedi was, it was like, yeah, I'm going to give you something different though. It's like, all right. Yeah. Sometimes I just want good versus evil and redemption and arcs like that. They work for me. So final thoughts on these two scripts. Clearly you much prefer Jurassic World in Star Wars space.
Yes, that's exactly what this was. I think it's a no-brainer. This is by far a much better script and actually continues on the thematic through lines that we've gotten from the previous two films that, you know, the third movie just seemed to abandon. It feels like it's servicing the characters and giving us interesting plot points and giving us these epic moments that we want in a climactic finale. It feels familiar, yet distinctly its own. And when you compare it to just plot hole city, which is The Rise of Skywalker, I would much rather take this. Much rather take this. And even the name, my God, Duel of the Fates, that's an amazing name for this movie, considering how they're tying in everything. Like, the entire... This also... I'll be quick here, but, like, this also feels like it completely ties together the eight films that came before it, whereas The Rise of Skywalker doesn't do that filling way.
And for me, I just don't know without seeing it executed. I feel like with the things that I know, there's things I go, I love that. And over here I go, I don't know. I'd have to see how this was done to be able to compare how this other thing was done. And, you know, the movie we got, they microwaved it, so it's easy to see all the faults inside of it. And maybe they would have done the same thing over here. But in general, my feeling is... They whoever was doing that third movie, we had a really tough time because Force Awakens and Last Jedi didn't seem to be fully on the same page, building towards one thing. They seemed to kind of be building towards kind of two different things in debating what they wanted to do. And I don't know how you land that and tie together all this stuff, because with the movie we did get, as you said, it didn't have an identity. Maybe this one over here would have fixed that. I'm not sure. So that's where I'm at. One final thing we would talk about real quick. It's been came out this last week that Taika Waititi has been approached about directing a Star Wars movie. And if you don't know, he directed the last episode of the first season of The Mandalorian. And most people really enjoyed the episode. It definitely had flavor of humor, his humor inside of it. Your take on this one?
Probably an unpopular one. I think it's kind of a boring take. I mean, I'm not really surprised. I'm afraid that Taika Waititi is kind of just becoming like a company man, and like Disney is just sort of like going to the same pool of directors like Jon Favreau, Taika Waititi, Ron Howard, like those guys. And I feel because people really like Taika Waititi, and they, you know, he had proven success with Thor Ragnarok, which I guess, you know, what he did there just blew everyone's minds and whatnot, which, I mean, fair enough. And he's like a hot item right now. So, like, I understand them wanting to do it. And his episode of The Mandalorian was excellent. But I just, it feels like playing it safe to me. Like, this to me just feels like a, oh, yeah, we'll give Taika Waititi a shot at a film because everyone seemed to like this. Just very reactionary.
That's kind of what's all. I mean, I see things like this, and I almost kind of feel like, well, I just kind of assumed that happened.
Right.
Like, you just kind of, this guy that's already in their little space that becomes kind of a nerd darling. Well, yeah, of course they approached him and be like, hey, would you be interested? Like, I just hear things like that. And I assume that those conversations are taking place, and they have tons of meetings. That's just kind of how it works. Now, is it actually going to happen? I don't know. Should he do it? I don't know. Does it make sense that there was a sit down there? Well, yeah, I mean, I would assume that would happen.
Yeah, exactly. And then the other question is he going to be directing Kevin Feige's Star Wars movie because of their working relationship in the MCU? I mean, entirely possible. I think what kind of frustrates me is I really don't want Taika Waititi to get pigeonholed into like franchise filmmaking like this, because I'm much more interested in the stuff he's doing when he's given complete creative control, like stuff like What We Do in the Shadows, Jojo Rabbit, Hunt for the Wilder People. The stuff where he doesn't have to put a filter on and whatnot. And so, like, everything you said, not surprised at all, but it's just a very uninspired pick for directing a Star Wars movie. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm a big franchise guy, so what I don't want, and I think this is what we talked about 2 weeks ago, I don't want him to be the next Joss Whedon. That it's like this guy that did a bunch of interesting television stuff, these original ideas, and whether it's High School Vampire Slayer, his own version of Star Wars with Firefly, this odd show about like being able to like swap people's brains out and their skill sets, that initially starts out as this episodic show and then turns into this deep mythology about like, what are all the implications if you could actually do this? This gets really dark really fast, goes off in this totally different direction. And then what has he done in the last 10 years?
Yeah.
Three franchise movies. One of them he didn't really do. And it's dreadful. And it's like, what? How did we lose Joss Whedon for a decade to only doing big franchise stuff? I don't want that to happen to Taika Waititi.
Yeah, I don't want that to happen to him.
And I don't want him to get burned out by the system, because that seemed to be also a little bit what happened with Joss Whedon. He seemed really pumped up about doing Avengers, and then it did great, and people loved him. And he's like the top nerd darling for a little bit. And then he does Age of Ultron, and it seemed like there was a ton of studio notes, and there was all the stuff he wanted to do, and there's all the stuff Feige wanted him to cram in there. And then he's doing the press tour for it, and it looks like he's dying. He's saying stuff that it's like, Joss, I do not recommend you say that, buddy. You probably want to stop. And then here we are, you know, almost 5 years later, and all he's done is Justice League, kind of. Yeah. Kind of. Like, he did the wrap-up on Justice League to make it bad, or to make it worse. Like, what just happened?
Yeah, I completely agree. Now, I think Taika Waititi is a much more, because his background is primarily in film, I don't think we have to worry about that with him necessarily, maybe, but like, I agree with you. I don't to see that happen at all.
And as long as it doesn't, if he does a Star Wars movie, if he's able to do this kind of back and forth that it seems like he's currently doing, if he's able to keep that up, I'd love to see him like do it. I don't want it to be like the main episode stuff or whatever the new main episode stuff is. I don't want it to be that. But let him tell his weird story on Naboo with the gun guns or whatever. Like, I don't know what he would do, but
let him
do that.
Yeah.
And I'd love to see that, so long as he's still doing this back and forth, one for them, one for me deal.
Yeah. 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 I completely agree with that.
So it's been a fun conversation. Lots of Star Wars to talk. There's a bunch of other stuff that dropped, but when you had that kind of Star Wars news, it was like, we got to spend some time debating Last Jedi. And I knew we would disagree. Too often we agree on stuff. So it's like, this is one we can spend some time having a couple of different perspectives. Any other final things you want to talk about real quick this week? Anything on your mind?
I mean, like Kevin Feige met with, what's his face? Patrick Stewart. I think, but like Patrick Stewart mentioned that they met and Feige, come back, be Xavier again. And Patrick Stewart's like, I'd love to, but we did Logan. Yeah, so it's
I wonder about what that real conversation was.
Yeah, like, I wonder too.
Do I believe that Kevin Feige was trying to bridge the MCU to that muddled continuity? Do I think he tried to do that? Like, absolutely. No, I do not believe for a second that we were ever going to see Patrick Stewart actually properly as Charles Xavier. Like, is someone as smart as Kevin Feige want to bring in 80-year-old Patrick Stewart to bridge to a very broken continuity? Why would he ever do that?
Here's the thing. I think there is a case to be made for them being able to do it and do it successfully. Not necessarily bridging it, because we all know what the continuity is like in the X-Men universe. The continuity is just all over the place. So, since the continuity in the X-Men universe is all over the place, why don't you take these incredible actors who are basically, like, if you're not thinking of the comic version of these versions of them, you know, Michael Fassbender, James McAvoy, Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen, you're thinking of those guys as Professor X and Magneto. So if there was a way to bring them back and get people excited about these X-Men being in the Marvel Universe, I think it could actually work. Now, you know, whether they do that remains to be seen. Whether or not we see James McAvoy or Michael Fassbender play these characters again, who knows? But the fact that he's thinking about it and the fact that he did have a conversation with Patrick Stewart does excite me.
Yeah, I am just curious what that really was. I don't believe it at all. I think actors, they know what people want to hear. They know how to, like, did he have a meeting with Kevin Feige? Oh, I'm sure he did. And they talked about some things. And so he's out there promoting Picard. And so he's just saying everything that's getting his name out there that's going to get people excited and get some people talking about stuff.
Yeah,
so what could he say that'll tie the stuff that he's working to in his name to the most popular franchise going right now? Oh, yeah. Like, we talked about it, but he's making sure the door's closed. He's not teasing anyone with false information. Oh, yeah. We talked about it. And I mean, the big problem, because of Logan, I can't do it. Just because of Logan, that's the only reason.
Like, but see, I believe that, because why would you ever want to go back to the character after such an incredible send-off? You know, why would you ever want to revisit those people?
That's true. Do I believe that Kevin Feige would bring in all of the baggage with this? Like, the thing that he did so well was a very consistent continuity throughout a bunch of franchises, and there's a couple oopsies, but nothing compared to any of two movies inside of that Fox universe. Do I think Kevin Feige? I just don't think he would want that. So that's the part that I'm so skeptical about. I totally believe Patrick Stewart would be like, yeah, I did a good job of choosing when to exit, so I'm not going back. I believe that.
Interesting. Yeah, fair. I'm curious to see if we hear anything else from, like, you know, Ian McKellen or, like, Michael Fassbender or James McAvoy.
But that's it. Like, the other one, if other people were saying it, I'd be like, okay, maybe my cynicism is misplaced. But when it's just the one guy saying it right now, right as he's promoting his show and stuff like that, it goes, okay. And it's the guy that has such an easy out. Because Logan was so loved. The guy with the easy out. It's not like, you know, Michael Fassbender's like, I mean, we did Dark Phoenix, and that was just the send-off that I wanted. We ended on a high note. Everyone agrees it's the best of my movies. And so because I did such a great job, I can't return as Magneto because I want to be remembered. Like, no, like, he's not the one saying it. It's the guy that can use that out.
Yeah, yeah, I guess that's true. Would you, just to kind of, you know, entertain this idea, would you be interested in seeing, because I think I agree, I think the older guys definitely know, would you be interested, if they could make it work, seeing James McAvoy and Michael Fassbender come back and just play these characters but without the baggage?
I don't think so. I want a hard reboot.
Really?
Yeah. And it's not against them, it's that it's a 20-year-old franchise that they've been trying to like move along, but they didn't set it up to be a 20-year-old franchise, and so it's just perpetually had endless continuity issues. And I mean, with multiverse, I guess there's some things that they could do to be able to bridge it, but I'd much rather just have a hard reset and do X-Men however Kevin Feige wants to do it. And that's even some of the issues I think they had with First Class, was it felt like they're doing like this reset thing, but then like we'll do it in the 60s. Like, what do we do for the sequel? I guess we'll do it in the 70s. And yeah, it was like, actually, there's so many limitations on it that they did a great job with what they had, but eventually they just ran out of steam. Whereas you just clean the slate, everything off the clear. We're going to do an X-Men franchise now, and we can have total fresh storytelling. We get to pick from all the X-Men, whichever ones we want. That just sounds so much better to me than doing anything where there's any constraints on it. Just let Kevin Feige and whoever he gets, clean slate. No reason to tie to the past, even though, you know, they did a great job.
Well, I will say this. I think they can do that with McAvoy and Fassbender still in their roles. Because look, we got J.K. Simmons as J. Jonah Jameson now. And he was J. Jonah Jameson in another incarnation of Spider-Man. So I think when actors really truly embody these characters and like they are basically associated with them, there's no saying that they can't bring them in to play these new versions. I get what you're saying with the baggage and just wanting to start completely new, but I think if there was a case to be made, you can make it for both actors that have played Charles Xavier and Magneto.
Yeah, we'll see. Even kind of with the J.K. Simmons, if it is a cute cameo, I think you can get away with doing that sort of thing. We'll find out in this next movie, like, is he a major player? And they really did just kind of continue him over. And I think that would make me go, okay, maybe you can do this a little bit. Mm-hmm. It feels like it gets pretty confusing if you're not taking, like, side character guy in doing that, but you actually literally take the leads and do that, and you're like, yeah, totally different continuities, but these two leads are the same. Everyone else is different. Some people don't get confused like that, but I've talked to my mother before, and she'll be confused by that.
Yeah.
And all these people in the comment section will be like, no, they're the same people. Like, come on. Can you guys not? I even have conversations with people confused as to, like, why there's two different Flashes and why the guy on the TV show's not in the movies.
And like,
I like how these conversations frequently with people, or they'll be like, they should have just had Grant do it. Well, then it would be the TV show, the movie. No, it, same actor, different continuity. It's like, that's weird.
So
they're great. No criticism. Even my massive criticisms of Dark Phoenix and Apocalypse, it's not their performances at all. Well, maybe McAvoy in Dark Phoenix was that, but it was written so weird that I don't think he had much to do. But I'm having a hard time seeing wanting the bridge. I've been excited for a while to have a clean slate with the X-Men. As soon as there are all these rumors, the acquisition, I just like clear it out. It's a franchise I feel is legitimately, properly due for a good reboot.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And that's because you even think, like, you know, we're doing Wolverine with the X-Men kind of ended 15 years ago. And then they just had to keep finding excuses to, like, all right, we'll do Days of Future Past. And then he's doing these solo movies. But like his trilogy ended 15 years ago. And it was what still went until just a few years ago. Like, that's weird. So that's the stuff to me where I go, let's just, whatever is a nice set of X-Men, and we can just do whatever we want with it.
Yeah.
No concerns. That's the idea for me that I get excited about more so than like, but I really like James McAvoy. Like, yeah. And he got four movies. He got four movies. A whole decade. That's a good run.
Yeah. So. I think you're probably right. I think ultimately they will probably do a clean reset. It's just, it's fun to entertain the idea maybe.
And we're in a realm where, as you said, J.K. Simmons did do it.
Yep.
At a certain point in time, all bets are off.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And now, especially with the fun stuff with Sony, like sneaking in more, like his own shit, like it is all, like, bets are off what might happen with all this stuff.
Yeah. Before we close out, though, I do want to ask you a question.
Okay.
Because I don't think we talked about this. What are your thoughts on Disney getting rid of the Fox on 20th Century Fox?
Yeah. I mean, I get it. I get kind of why they would do that. It's totally branding. It makes sense that you don't want to have a different company's name, especially because Fox is this big and they bought this much of it. And so then Fox News is still over there, owned by someone else, and Fox the TV station's over there and it's owned by somebody else. Yeah. And so then when you're like, you're putting out your Disney movie and it says 20th Century Fox on it, I totally get why you don't want to do that. Especially because Fox is so prominent in all these other things. But it's hard to not be like, oh man, that feels like a gut punch to movie fans.
It's inexcusable. I mean, just to the history of cinema, like how can you do that? Like, even Sony kept Columbia Pictures. Like, it drives me up a wall. Absolutely.
Not surprising though, but
oh no, not at all. But like, it's
same
just
time,
really,
like, whoo.
Yeah, and it's just bad. To
6 months
like,
later. Six months later, they didn't even wait a year. It was like, all right, see those movies they put out? They bombed. Now we're getting rid of them. Like, ooh. Brutal, Disney. Just, you got to do what you got to do, but man, come on.
It's a damn shame. Damn shame.
Yeah. So anyway, thanks for talking movies with me. Everybody, let me know what you thought down below in the comments section. We're talking Star Wars, so I know everybody's got an opinion on all of that. We'll be back next week to talk about whatever people are talking about in the world of movies. And as always, keep talking movies too much.